It's the Mark Boyle Show. Join preparedness thinker, freedom-loving patriot, and nutritional expert Mark Boyle for in-depth discussions on real fake news, strategies for protecting your rights, your property, and your health, interviews, expert guests, listener questions, and authors on these topics and more. And now here is deep dive thinker, Mark Boyle. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is Mark Boyle, your host. And I always like to open up with one of the listener questions. And if you haven't got that number yet and you'd like to be part of the show and leave a question, just call area code 520-261-9149. And then I go through all of those questions and pick one that I think is awesome. So tonight we have a question from a caller that had a question about preparedness. So let's take a listen and see what he has to ask.
You know, I want to know this. Now, what's the difference between being a prepper versus being prepared? I mean, we've seen all that on since Florence hit, and we see people scrambling to get supplies and fighting with each other at the Walmart trying to get what limited supplies are available. You know, so maybe you could, answer that question for me there, huh, guy? Talk to you later. Thanks. I'll be listening. Bye.
All righty. That question seems to make sense to me. Obviously, he's wondering, is there a difference between prepping or being a prepper, I would say, and just being a prepared person? I don't see a big difference in this. It's kind of semantics, really. When you look up both words in the dictionary, they're so close that really it's only a context or a contextual difference. But I think a prepared person is someone that prepares in all aspects of life. And a prepper may be the same type of person, but you might prepare for going to work or going out and planting your seeds for the summer or the spring or whatever you kind of do in that aspect of your life. You might prepare for a business meeting or a PowerPoint presentation. So we all prepare, and we do it daily whether we're conscious of it or not. I think a prepper normally falls into a person that is prepping for a disaster or a natural thing that could happen but isn't really on the horizon just yet. You prepare for work because every day you go to work. But when you prepare for a disaster or a calamity in your life, it's kind of like buying insurance. You want to have it. You want it to be there, but you hope you never end up using it. So to me, the two words are pretty much close in meaning. But I think in the media and on Facebook and in the social world and how we just like to identify ourselves, I would think that me as a prepper has a lot of preps regarding all types of calamities or disasters or just SHTF moments or Teotwaki events. And it encompasses life as a major change that could or could not happen. If we end up without power, I want to be prepared for that. If I end up having to leave my home because I'm chased off by zombies or something crazy like that, I want to be prepared for that type of an event if it were to occur in my life. Whereas being prepared or a prepared person, those are things that I prepare for if I'm going to do a job tomorrow. I want to have all my tools. I want to make sure I have all of the supplies and materials required to get that job started or maybe to complete it. I might want to have a signed contract with the client. These are things we prepare for and they're imminent. It's part of our daily, weekly, or monthly lives. You might prepare for a wedding. Why? Because you're getting married. But when you prepare for a disaster, it really is kind of like insurance. So I would say the main difference is prepared people are always thinking about things they're going to be doing coming up shortly, and they want to have everything ready for it. And a prepper is somebody that is kind of buying insurance through their preps in case something happens. So I hope that kind of helps explain it as far as the way I see it. I could be wrong.
Hey all, it's Rob Alderucci, the host of The Growing Homestead, and I would like to invite you on my adventure into all things homesteading, where we will learn to raise our own fruit, vegetables, as well as caring for livestock in a push for self-sufficiency. Join me Sundays at noon.
So I wanted to ask y'all, what do you think of this Kavanaugh Supreme Court hearing and and all the just the games that are being played. Now, I don't really care if you like the guy or not, and it really doesn't matter. The reality is what's happening to our country, and I hate to point fingers, but this kind of destruction is happening from a progressive point of view, and seems like it's usually the Democrats that are doing this. Granted, if there are issues that should be brought out about a person's past, whether they can be on the Supreme Court or not, that's valid. That's not progressivism. That's not being a fly in the ointment. That's just saying, hey, there's an issue here. I think we should consider it. And that's what the Senate hearings are all about, is to kind of check the guy out and see. That's why they do investigations and they vet the guy before he even goes to a nomination hearing. But what I'm really concerned about is this digging up the past. Now, I'm not talking about questions that somebody might have done or actions they had taken recently. I mean, we are talking 35 years ago. I can barely remember what I had for dinner last night, but this is the Supreme Court, so we have a higher standard for them. So should we go back 35 years based on a hunch, based on a rumor, based on unsubstantiated rumors coming out of the rumor mill? And yet they talk about fake news on the media all the time, and then they perpetrate this kind of BS. So to me, this is fake news, it's slander, and it's really hurting the system and the process we have in place for picking a Supreme Court justice. So like I've said, if this happened recently, then by all means, we should be aware of it, and it should be part of the confirmation process. But that is why the FBI vets these people before they're ever even nominated. Because no president, whether it's Trump or Obama, wants to put somebody in there that has all these skeletons in their recently closed closet that would make them look bad and make the system look flawed. But this process that we're seeing now in the media, I don't know, it just hurts me on a visceral level, because I watch all these programs on the news and I listen to the news and I see all this stuff and what these way more educated talk show hosts than I talk about is names and dates and justices and the legal system and charges and statutes of limitation. But I look at it in a different way. I know all that's true and I know it's irritating, but what I don't understand is, why is it happening? Why is this being allowed to happen to a guy like Justice Kavanaugh, or anybody for that matter? It seems like somebody can just throw something out there and see if it sticks, and then by golly, the media in today's world will make sure it sticks. They give it legs, they perpetrate it, they give it some credibility just by constantly talking about it, and then not looking at the facts. They don't look at it in the media and say, well, this happened years ago, and whether it's true or not, she has postponed coming in and talking to Congress and the Senate and these hearings about what happened. So this is just a run-out-the-clock maneuver. You can see it. Anyone with two or three brain cells firing can see it, that this is just a run-out-the-clock maneuver by the Democrats, and I hate to point fingers like that, but that's what it is. And the media is complacent in this by running with this story and constantly sticking it out there. And I almost get mad when I see conservative news shows cover this too, even though they're covering it from a more objective way, it's still getting more legs through that. And then when a good person, maybe a good anchor on the news goes, what about statute of limitations? What about innocent until proven guilty? It goes nowhere. It's like they're in an echo chamber and no one is listening, because no one will open the door and let those common sense questions get out into the public arena. So it aggravates me. It makes me so damn aggravated when you see this going on in front of you like a train wreck, and you can't even wave at the conductor because the windows have been spray painted and they don't even know there's something coming. And as the American people, we're forced day in and day out, evening in and evening out, to watch this train wreck happening in slow motion, and we can literally see I don't know who they are. The actors in this plot destroying the train tracks, so there will be another train wreck. And yet, I don't know. We're helpless? Are we unable to fix this problem? I think we are. I think America passed a point of no return when it comes to common sense and civility 80, 90 years ago. But yet here it is, time and time again, that we're seeing something in the news that makes no sense, and it numbs us to this kind of garbage. Now, I don't know if the Senate will confirm him, but I know there's a time limit on it. And if she keeps stalling and the opposing players in this train wreck continue to stall, then the confirmation can't go forward. So all this is being played out in the backroom deals. And as an American, it makes me want to throw up because I just want to get a Supreme Court nominee and move on. We have lots of problems in America that need to be resolved. And meanwhile, we're over here looking at this schoolyard, almost kindergarten fight, and everybody's like, oh my God, did you see that? Oh, wow, look at this. Meanwhile, the normal American that's working his or her rear end off, trying to just make a better life, is forced to hear it, see it, and put something on hold that needs to be done. And yet, it's not going to get done. It's just going to be stalled again and again. And I think it's just for these politicians to get their 30 minutes of fame here, 60 minutes of fame there. And then this all becomes part of their talking points. So when the day comes to where they need to be reelected, depending on the room of people, they can sit there and go, I fought against this. I thought it was an injustice. She was part of the Me Too movement. But then, when it turns around and happens to become a vote, and they're talking to conservatives in the room, they'll sit there and go, well, I voted for it because I thought this was just a charade. So they can talk about it from either side of their mouth, depending on the crowd they're talking to, so they can get reelected. Has nothing to do with you or me or doing our work that we expect of them. Now, the Supreme Court is really should use the litmus test of the Constitution because that is what they review. They look at laws, and those laws are held up against the standard of the contract that we agreed on that governs this country. So a judge should be able to look at that and go, this is or this is not constitutional. And therefore, we have someone looking through the looking glass with the right lens and everything to judge whether something should or should not be allowed as constitutional. But we would all much rather, you know, get our favorite person in there. I mean, we don't really care if the quarterback can throw a football. He's just our friend. Is that what the Supreme Court has become? I think not. Now, the Supreme Court weighs issues kind of like, well, we can all relate to this. You have a mortgage and you have an agreement to pay these payments over so many years at this rate of interest and on this day of the month for 30 years. That's your mortgage. Now, if you wanted a judge to look at your mortgage to see if there was a breach in that mortgage, either on your side or another, wouldn't you want that judge to understand that type of law and how it applies? Because make no mistake, as Americans, we follow the Constitution. Just like as a homeowner, you follow the rules of your mortgage agreement. It can be changed if you amend the mortgage agreement, which would mean you would talk to the lender and say, hey, I would like to blah, blah, blah. I would like to negotiate a lower interest rate. I would like to amend our mortgage to fit this or that. And that's the only reason. So you'd want that judge to be able to look at it and go, why would you want to do that? Or the mortgage company to be able to look at it fairly and go, oh, we got some wiggle room here. We can do that. Or no, we can't. You're going to need to get an amendment to your mortgage. It's that simple. This is what the Constitution is. That's why we have amendments. Because somebody comes up with a change that they think is worthy of doing. And then it's basically ratified by 2/3 of the states. And if they all buy your argument and say, yes, we should do this, then they do it. The Supreme Court has nothing to do with that other than once it is ratified and it becomes an amendment, then it becomes part of federal law. And therefore, if somebody thinks that they're being slighted or cheated, then they can take it to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court looks at the letter and the intent of that agreement and says, in our opinion, you should be able to do that or you should not be able to do that. And that's it. Now, that is federal. On a state law, states can do whatever they want. So the Supreme Court is not this end-all, be-all arbiter of our freedom and liberty. The Supreme Court offers opinions. They don't make law. They don't do rulings. They just say, in our opinion, senators, this law will be found unconstitutional if it's challenged in court, and here is why. So it's really not as complicated as we would like it to be because it makes us feel good, or the judges in the Supreme Court are like kings that can make rulings. So, you know, they're all worried about Roe v. Wade. Well, it's settled law because the Supreme Court might have had an opinion that, yes, you can do this. What that means is each state can look at it on a state level and go, we disagree with that. And they can write their own laws because the Supreme Court does not write laws. They just look at ones that are proposed, kind of like an advisor, and they just say, in our opinion, this is a nightmare waiting to happen, or this has legal standing because of this, 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 and this. You're not violating the rights of the people. It really isn't that complicated, but we've gotten so far away from the reality of the Constitution. And this dog and pony show with the Kavanaugh hearings and nomination process is part of that nightmare that we live every day. And so we become callous to it. And then we just think, oh, what does it matter? Nominate whoever you want. And we become not part of the process anymore. And then they can continue to run roughshod over us all they want. So with all that having been said, part of the show I'd like to just kind of talk about once in a while is how do we as Americans maybe get a little bit more control of our freedom and our legal system and our political system. And it's hard to do when you're busy. You know, I think it's not a conspiracy or a grand scheme, but the reality of it is we work so hard to pay all of our taxes and our bills and to provide a good life for our families and ourselves that we don't have time to study the minutiae of what is going on in Washington, D.C.
Contra radio listeners, this is Randy from Bulldog Custom Gun Leather. I've been building the finest custom leather holsters that many can buy for the past 12 years. I'm a retired 35-year veteran police officer and have carried a concealed firearm daily for the past 42 years. I know what works and what doesn't work for the safe and comfortable carrying of concealed firearms. I use only the finest premium cowhide tanned in the USA. Bulldog Custom Gun Leather is not a large holster manufacturer and never will be. All my holsters are handcrafted one at a time by me in my shop located in Fort Smith, Arkansas. My website address is www.BulldogLeatherCompany.com. That's BulldogLeatherCompany.com. Mention Contra Radio and receive a 10% discount on your order. Thanks.
And this all harkens back to when Congress decided that they were just too damn lazy to do their job. And so they've allowed senators to pick up the slack. Well, that would be like the police department deciding that, you know, we're just kind of busy and we got stuff to do. So let's let the security officers at the mall handle that. We don't need to be involved. Well, that might be great for, you know, people jaywalking in the mall parking lot or riding skateboards and stuff. But when it becomes serious, then you need the police to step up. Well, Congress needs to step up. Now, how it was set up originally, way back in the day when people actually cared, you would elect your representative. He was someone that lived in your district. The districts were localized and they hadn't been gerrymandered to death, to where you literally elected a representative from your community. Might have been somebody you went to school with or played football with. And I'm not hearkening back to the good old boys club. I'm just saying these were people you knew. You knew their family. You knew their history in the community. You knew them. You might not be best friends with them, might not even go to barbecues with them, but you saw them. You saw them in the community. You might have waved at them at a ball game or something. These were your representatives. They knew the community. They knew you were a farming community. They knew you were a ranching community. How about mining? Whatever your community really excelled in and that actually brought home the bacon for the entire community, they knew that. Maybe their father was a miner at the local mine. He understood mining laws, the dangers of mining and all that. So when they went to the state to voice opinions on things, they were kind of bringing your thought process to it. So when somebody would say, I think we need to have a law that does this, maybe from another county or another district that wants to impose EPA regulations, your representative would go, that will kill my community. This is my friends, my family. This is my community. We can't allow that to happen. And so they were your voice. Now, all of those representatives would meet at the state and they would hammer out the details that pertain to your area and their communities. And there was common sense involved. And then they would agree on the bigger issues. And the little ones were left to the city and the county and the community. But the big ones that had overreaching implications across, you know, the entire state and may affect your community, your representative could voice his opinion and go, that will really hurt us. Now, if your community happens to be a very small minority, then maybe you lost out. But that's how it worked. And then they would get together and appoint representatives, basically senators, to go to Washington and take everything that they had agreed on a state level, to write those laws and to oversee those laws and make sure they were in keeping with all of the representatives. And senators were appointed by the Congress and all your representative friends, and they could be recalled at an instant. So, you know, back then, it wasn't that easy to, you know, get a message to the loser and say, hey, you're talking something that we didn't discuss. You're not authorized to bring your opinion to this. You're just here to write the laws that we told you to write. So you've been recalled. Your replacement's already going to be here. And that's that. Nowadays, we have telephones that we can do that with. So you can just call the bum up and say, hey, we don't care what you think. We sent you there to do what the representatives think because they're representing the people in their community. So you've been recalled. Bye-bye. See you later. You're out of here. Jump on a plane. Go home. Either way, you no longer have authority to act in the name of the state. So you're done. End of story. It's over. Party's over. And then a new one was appointed and there it went. So you had control over the Senate. And then the Senate would make these laws and take them before the president and they would get signed. And the president really was more of the guy that handled external affairs, treaties with other countries, negotiations, protecting our border. His input on state level was pretty much of no regard, other than he had a big bully pulpit to where he could maybe talk to the masses and sway an opinion. But he wasn't a lawmaker. That was the senators. And the senators were answering to the representatives who answered to you and your district of maybe 3,000-4,000 people. It was very direct line of communication. Now it's all upside down and screwed up and bass-ackwards. Nothing we can do about it unless we want to do away with the 17th Amendment because it's just as big a mess as the Amendment on Prohibition. But if you remember, Prohibition was actually an amendment to the Constitution. It was such a mess, such a disaster, and so unenforceable that they basically repealed it. but it stays there. You know, you don't scratch it off. You don't erase it. You just add something that says, this is void. I don't know what that's called, but there's a word for it. So it basically went away. And we can do that with a lot of this stuff, but we can't because our representatives have become lazy and don't want to do their job, and they don't answer to you and your community because of gerrymandering, which now puts their voters maybe 50 miles away into a bigger town that has no community ties. It's a metropolitan area. They think differently. Not saying they're bad. They just think differently. They're not a ranching community. They're more into other things. So their issues are mass transit, things like that. But we've gerrymandered it to where now half of that big metropolis area is now voting for your little tiny rural area. And so when you're running to be a representative, you literally have to go campaign in a big metropolis or a community where they don't know you. They don't understand your issues. They don't know what it's like to have bridges wash out to where the school can't even get to the school bus can't even get to the school. They don't get it. So we've allowed that to happen. And these things have snowballed and cascaded to such a grand downstream problem that it's become too complex to fix. I mean, it isn't. I mean, we are America. We can fix things. We're good at mobilizing and taking care of problems. Unfortunately, the problems can't be pointed at with one finger. And when you try to, then they say, oh, Mark, you're painting with a broad brush. Well, yes, because we're trying to cover a big area because it's been so fractionalized. So that's how I look at that. It's just, how do we fix it? I have no idea. But it's plain to see that this is going on and on and on, and that's why the Kavanaugh nomination process is just become a joke, because the senators are just blathering on trying to make points, and then they'll change their story, make more points, so no matter what room they're campaigning in, they can talk out of that side of their mouth. It's that simple, and it's aggravating. So it just kind of really brings me down as a human being, when you can see all the facts, you can see the problem, you can just glance under the hood of this and go, there's the problem. And because of the society we live in, people will go, well, explain yourself. Well, I can't really explain it. It works in my head. I know it's right. I've heard enough and seen enough to know that's the problem. I can't articulate it well enough to maybe get you to buy into what I'm talking about. So should that be held against you or I because we maybe can't articulate it? No, we can see it. We know it. And to me, it's like, I don't know, knowing it's going to rain. There's a nor'easter coming. How do you know? Well, you're not a meteorologist, but you've known, you've lived it your whole life. You just go, it's those clouds. They're telling me, you're one of the whack jobs. No. They're telling me by their shape and the way they're forming and the way they're moving that we got a storm coming. Ah, you're silly. You're not a meteorologist. Why don't you shut up? You're not a doctor. Why don't you shut up? You're not a commentator on the radio. Why don't you shut up? And that is the attitude. And it, to me, it really irritates me because we see it. We've lived it. We know it. We can see a storm brewing. And it forces you to stand back and go, you know what? If you want to be standing around caught in the rain, fine. I'm going inside. I mean, we can't do that with the political process, though, because then you stand inside, all of a sudden, the storm comes along and washes you away because you couldn't do anything about it. So I don't know if any of you feel the same way about this, but we all have that intuition, that knowledge, that clarity when you see something and you can't put it into words, but you've seen it so many times that you know what's happening. But they've moved the goalposts so much that you can't talk about it. You're not one of them. You're not in this circle. How can you talk about medical issues when you're not a doctor? You know, well, I've probably watched enough videos that would constitute 1,000 hours of lectures at a university by university professors in that field. But see, you didn't kiss the ring, and therefore you're not a doctor. You might know twice as much as a doctor, but they're not going to listen to you. So meanwhile, you got to sit there and watch the patient die because you don't have a blessing from the almighty government or king or ruler that says you could help that person. It's the same thing with politics. We watch this stuff on social media. We see what's going on and we go, oh my God, it's going to rain. And everyone's like, how do you know? You're just, you know, one of them people that think you know everything. And to a point, maybe that's valid. You know, you don't have to get involved in every battle. But I don't know. There's just been so, I mean, how many of us have watched, you know, the fiasco that was the FBI investigation on Hillary Clinton? Now, anyone with two brain cells still firing would know that she lied. She is a liar. And she violated more laws than you and I could ever even consider violating without going to jail. But they wordsmith it around, they play it, they twist it and spin it, and they hand it to their quarterbacks in the media that run with it and shove it down everyone's throat. And people are like, well, they're just better at that than the conservatives. No, there are good conservatives out there that are really smart and articulate and good at it. But it likens back to the old adage, you know, if a tree falls in the forest and there's no one to hear it, did it really make a sound? It's the same thing. You know, there's 90 out of 100% of media coverage, paper, TV, radio, whatever medium that's out there. I would say over 90% of it is controlled by liberal progressives that hate you and I. And I'll say it, they don't like us at all. They literally have a hatred that we want to be free and able to run our own lives because they're control freaks. How can you run your own life? You're a stupid farmer. Shut up and sit down. We'll handle big agri for you. Oh, okay. So that's how they look at us. Now, I heard a great story on one of the shows I was watching, and maybe you'd be interested in this too. Because we all know that Facebook, Google, YouTube are private companies. Well, they're corporations, but they're privately owned. They're not government agencies. So therefore, they don't fall under all the regulations as maybe a municipality would or something like that. They don't fall under the FCC. And the statistic was brought up that over 75% of Americans get their news from those types of social groups, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google search. So it stands to reason then that if they're marginalizing or pushing off the page conservative talk, then they are literally, literally changing the election. They're controlling people's thought, not by some Dr. Evil mind machine. They're controlling how you perceive information by how they hand it to you and drip it out to you. And then you think, well, you know, if there was something on the other side to be said, I'm sure it would be here. No, it really wouldn't be. You know, you look at what they've done to so many big names in the media that were conservative. They tried to ruin Hannity. They have tried to ruin Alex Jones. Whether you like these people or not is irrelevant. If there's an election and you want to get both sides of the issue, it's a given that that conservative right-wing side will not even show up. And that to me is influencing an election. It's influencing social dynamics and how we perceive our world around us. Not because we're being told how to perceive it, like, oh, the sky is green. No, it's actually blue. No, it's green, and if you don't buy into it, we'll shoot you. That's a different kind of control. But every time you try to look up what color the sky is, if the only thing that you're going to find on 5 million Google pages is the sky is green, eventually you're going to start thinking, maybe I'm wrong. So I would like your input on it. Give me a holler. Area code 520-261-9149. And leave a voicemail question. give us your authority and a permission to use it on air, and we'll actually play it. And then we can discuss it, and we can have a discussion, because that's the only way we can do it. We're a small voice here. Conservative talk may be big, but it's up against people that are maybe not bigger, but definitely have the eyeballs and the clout and the ability to just continue to flood it out there. Now, I personally quit watching the news a long time ago because there's nothing out there. So I don't want false information even leaking into my eardrum. I might watch a few minutes of it while I'm searching for something worth watching, like a useless series that has nothing to do with life. I would rather watch than the lies, just the plain, blatant garbage coming out of their mouths. And you see it all the time. I mean, we were watching a series, me and my wife, and you know, the one of the characters on the series is this really well-built, muscular guy. And his girlfriend is, you know, typical person. She likes to drink a lot. So there was a scene where he's making her a smoothie, and then he looks over at her coffee and he's like, "Oh, your crap is ready." You know, as if now I'm to think that coffee is crappier than a smoothie. I guess that was a kind of like a subliminal type thing. And she goes, "Well, you know, does that smoothie have bacon in it?" And he's like, "No, you don't need that." This guy is really well-built, muscle-bound guy that works out a lot. He's also barely in his 30s. And he drinks these green, ugly-looking smoothies. And her, you know, not being in the best of shape, eats bacon. So there's the problem. See? She eats poorly and he eats correctly. Is that true? No, it's not. But that is what's being pushed out there. So writers will put that in there because that seems to be the norm. But it's not the norm. And it goes to my point on nutrition. You see this stuff, these commercials that tell you, lower your blood sugar by taking a pill. Well, I got a novel idea. Why don't you lower your blood sugar by not eating so much sugar? Oh, well, Mark, you're not a doctor. That makes way too much sense. It's like, so what you're telling me, Mark, is if it hurts when I laugh, I should just stop laughing. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. No, if you have a blood sugar problem, what is that telling you? As a common sense thinking person, you have too much glucose in your blood. Where did that come from? Yeah, Martians? They just beam down sugar into your blood? No, it's what you're eating. You eat fruits. They're fructose. That's sugar. Whether you want to call it natural sugar or whatever, it raises your glucose levels in your blood. See, because the body's biochemistry doesn't read the label and doesn't buy into the BS being shoved down our throat by the FDA. You eat fruit, you eat a potato, you eat pasta, you eat bread, your insulin level will have to spike out to get rid of that glucose that you put in your blood. So who did it? Did the Martians do it? No, you did it by eating that food. And your body immediately said, "Thank you for the sugar." It goes to the blood and the insulin goes, "Oh, here we go. We're busy again getting rid of all this blood sugar. Let's beat it into the muscles to get some energy out of it." And because those receptors become adapted to it, they become tolerant. Why? Why would they become tolerant to a food source you're supposed to eat, according to the media and the doctors and the nutritionalists and the FDA? Well, I don't know, but that's what they say to eat. So if I'm eating all this smoothies and lettuce and potatoes and whole grain bread and all this crap, then I might become insulin tolerant. Then I'll just have to take insulin because I need this. And I need more insulin to beat it into my muscles. As if there's no other option. And yet there is. So you're not going to see it. You're not going to see it in the commercials because when they're talking about lowering your A1C, there's some clown in the background barbecuing. And when it pans over to the barbecue grill, there's corn and potatoes on it. And a little tiny piece of meat. Because everyone knows you shouldn't eat fat. Everyone anyway that has never done an ounce of research knows you shouldn't eat meat. So there's the visual. Bam. See that? This commercial is made by a big pharmaceutical company. They're smart. And that guy in the background, I know he's just a prop, but he's cooking corn. Corn must be good. Corn's got sugar in it. That's how you make whiskey. Duh. So you see it, you perceive it, you believe it. So that's the brainwashing that is with nutrition, and it runs the gamut on everything. You know, it really doesn't change anything, whether it's politics and they're lying through their advertising and their marketing. And if you can't see it or you haven't been trained to see it, then it's almost invisible, subliminal, but it's there, it's out there, you know, and that's how they do it. That's how they get you to think that eating carbs are good for you when in all reality, they're not. And I know this because 50 years ago, you could not find the word essential carbohydrate in any medical journal ever written for the last 100 years because the body does not need carbohydrate. So they took it and turned meat and fat into the alternate fuel source, meaning that carbohydrates must be the primary fuel source. Science didn't come up with that classification. That was marketing, you know, just like tub of lard. Well, lard is good for you. Lard is practically tallow. It's a great product for cooking. Most chefs and pastry chefs use lard, not shortening. So the shortening companies of the day thought that they would do a smear campaign on lard by calling people, you know, a lard butt, a tub of lard, and all these derogatory things that matriculated over time through society to where now lard is really not something you cook with it. In fact, I don't even know why it's there on the shelf. Who would use lard? And so now all the shortening companies that are hydrogenated garbage are now prominently displayed on the supermarket shelves because of these campaigns that over time made it happen. Lard is also high in fat. Fat is bad for you, according to the other campaigns of marketing and how we should eat, because we always want to listen to the federal government when it comes to nutrition, right? So this is how it happens. And now all of a sudden, fat is bad. There's thousands of peer-reviewed papers out there that fat is not bad for you. Fat does not cause cholesterol that leads to heart attacks. It's a totally different thing, but you'd really have to crack open some books to figure it out. So you watch a commercial and they're cooking corn and baked potatoes and veggies on the grill and a little tiny piece of meat. Why is the meat so small? Oh, because meat has fat in it, and fat is bad for you.
Hi, this is John Jeffers inviting you to listen to my show, The Jeffers Brief. You know, on The Jeffers Brief, we discuss topics of interest and concerns for preppers and patriots. You can only find us on the Comptor Radio Network on podbean.com or KYAH 540 AM, Utah's Talk Authority. Hope you join me, and we'll talk to you then.
So if you ever wonder why, you know, people get overweight, and you go, yeah, but I eat steak every night for dinner. Of course you do. It's a small piece of steak because obviously your spouse is saying, you're getting overweight. Here's a smoothie, just like in the series I was watching. And so you eat a potato and some corn and throw in a salad because everyone knows salad is so good for you. It's really like a glass of water when it comes to calories. There's nothing in it, but eat a salad and use fat-free dressing. So your insulin gets up too high immediately, and therefore all the fat can no longer be burned because that's how our bodies work. Might not sound good. It might not feel good. It might not resonate with all the people that get all butthurt about it. But the reality is, once your insulin gets too high, there's a switch that flips, and all of a sudden, your awesome generator called your body flips from propane to gasoline. And now it cannot burn the one fuel source. It can only burn the other because that switch was flipped. So all of the fat and all of the food on your plate now becomes stored as body fat. Why? Because your body can't use it because that switch was flipped. It's that simple. It really is that simple. So you eat a high fat meal, but You eat enough pasta and bread to flip that switch, and it doesn't take much. And all of a sudden, all that juicy steak and butter becomes body fat. And because it might be there for storage, your body's not going to use it, because the next time you get hungry, you think it's going to tap into the storage? No, it's going to say, feed me. And you're going to eat something else that's equally as unbalanced and crappy. So now you'll get half of the carbs out of whatever snack you just ate, and the other part that would have been good for you now becomes body fat. And that's how you fatten cattle. You feed them a high grain, high sugar, high fat diet, and you will fatten those cows up awesomely fat. That's why they do it. So the same thing happens to us as humans. You eat a bunch of sugar. Basically, I'm calling sugar, sugar. Fruit is sugar. Bread, sugar. Donuts, sugar. Snickers bar, sugar. Apples, sugar. Baked potatoes, sugar. Corn on the cob, sugar. Corn in a can, sugar. Because it's got that carbohydrate in it. That's why you can make alcohol out of 90% of those things I just listed. And your insulin goes up, and boom, you're no longer burning fat. Well, that's okay, because fat is an alternative fuel source. The primary one is carbohydrates. Yeah, and that's the one that's given everyone diabetes. Now, you don't have to believe me. Really don't, because I'm not a doctor, so I really can't prescribe or nothing. But I can tell you, the doctors that are prescribing this garbage supermarket diet have also noticed an extreme rise in diabetes in this country. In fact, it has become epidemic, and childhood diabetes is off the charts. So I might not be right, but I can tell you for sure, everyone else is dead wrong. So whatever they're preaching isn't working. And speaking of preaching, I mean, we would all use this in our life, right? I mean, if you went to Church X and you're hanging out, you're like, this guy's great. These people are awesome. And they have a leader. And he says he had a vision. And we're supposed to, next month, hide because the world is ending. So everyone goes and hides wherever you can hide from that kind of catastrophe. And then you get up the next week and you find out nothing happened. I was wrong. Sorry, go on home, people. How many years are you going to go to that church hiding every other week for some foreseen catastrophe that never happens? Are you going to start to think to yourself, maybe this guy's antenna's a little off phase and not picking up what's being sent out? Yeah, of course you would. So you have doctors, medical research people. You have the Diabetes Association, the Cancer Association. Did you know they can't even cure athlete's foot, and yet they're trying to work on these really big diseases, cardiovascular disease, hardening of the arteries, Alzheimer's? They've been working on it for years, and everything they're saying you should be doing, everyone is doing, and it is getting worse, not better. That's a track record that if you were gambling in Vegas, you'd walk away from. And yet, everybody just follows along. Ah, so great. My doctor told me that I need to eat salad with low-fat dressing. Oh, really? And how did all his other patients do on this help you with diabetes diet? Oh, they're all dead. Ah, okay. Great. Enjoy your salad. So we don't look at the facts. I don't know why that is. Have we been conditioned to just ignore reality? Maybe. You know, and when I say we, I'm talking about me too. I'm not picking on anybody. We see this stuff, it washes over us subliminally and sometimes intentionally, and we just don't see it. How is that? How is that when if you were going to a church, you would see it within a month or two before you definitely quit giving them donations? You'd walk away. If you were betting on a team that just constantly says, we're the best, we're the best, we're the best, we got the best defense in the world and couldn't win a game, maybe they're wrong. Sure not going to bet on them. It's the same thing. We see our politicians doing the same thing, lying, cheating. We know it's wrong. We can use common sense and go, whatever you're talking isn't working. Point to a time when it's ever worked. Well, look at Chicago. Well, no, don't look at Chicago. Look at Washington, D.C. No, don't look at Washington, D.C. You know, gun control. Yeah, here's a great subject to maybe drill down into. Gun control. Where are the strictest laws on gun control in the United States? The same places where they have the toughest laws have the highest crime, the highest murder. Now, what do they do? What do these politicians do? Well, it's our neighboring state. Ah, so it's not the policy that you're pushing. It's the other state. See, you're not getting overweight because his advice sucks. It's because you don't know how to add. You can't count calories. It's BS. And we know it's BS. We see the BS. In fact, we can smell the BS. And yet, we'll wake up in the morning and go, hey, look at that, more BS. As an American, I just don't know. As a concerned patriot, I just don't know. As a prepper, I just don't know. As a religious man that cares about his family and his faith, I just don't know. How do we fix a problem that is so systemic and has so many years of manipulation behind it and mind games that, you know, these things are created in backroom deals and pushed out? All we can do is be in the world, but maybe not of it. But it sure is hard to do when you live in a free country where you're not free. And I'll wrap it up with my way of looking at this, and I could be totally wrong, but I'm probably not. Take the Greatest Generation, for example. They came back from the war, so thankful to be alive, and they had fought for freedom. They had fought for American values, liberty, and the American dream. And they wanted to maybe not impose it on the other countries that we had won the war, you know, for, but that was their reason for being there, to help. They get home, and they're alive. They're thankful. So they get married, raise a family, get a job, buy houses, become part of that American dream. Now, you would think these would be the greatest, most staunch patriots ever, and they were. But somehow they were not keeping their eye on the ball, because down the pike comes a New Deal and safety nets. And that generation probably watched. Now, they didn't have social media, so they had maybe a couple networks that they had watched the news from, you know, good old Walter Cronkite. And they had the newspaper, and they had radio. They didn't really have, you know, a cell phone in every pocket. So, but you would think at that level of patriotism, they would have seen Social Security and went, wait a minute, that's redistribution of wealth. I don't want you taking my money for somebody that can't take care of themselves. So the marketing machine kicks in and they're like, well, no, these are for people that haven't been able to set aside a retirement for them, have made bad choices, bad decisions. So we need to have a safety net for them. These could be your neighbors, the greatest country on earth that you fought for. We have the money to do this. And rather than to use reason or common sense, they bought into the hype and the BS and the snow job that was Social Security. And now we have it today. It limits our freedom. Is it a safety net? Not really. If it's a safety net, it's full of holes. I mean, a lot of big ones that you can fall through. So meanwhile, you know, the president, he's just like Obama. He's like, this is insurance. We won't have people dying on the sidewalks because they don't have health insurance. We're going to take care of everybody. Ain't that great? And what did the Supreme Court do? They looked at it and said, you cannot make it mandatory for Americans to buy insurance. That's the same argument that FDR used with Social Security. And the Supreme Court even back then said, you can't make it mandatory for Americans to buy insurance or a retirement program. So the marketers with Obama and FDR went back to the drawing board, and it was harder for FDR because he didn't really have as complete of a drawing board, went back to the Supreme Court and said, this is a tax. And the Supreme Court probably looked at him and go, then why are we here? You have the authority to tax. Why are you talking to us? Basically, go away. Do whatever you want. It's a tax. So now over all those years, they've been telling us it's insurance, but it's really a tax. They've been telling us there's a trust fund, but it's just a tax. That money goes into the general fund. there might have been an agreement and a handshake with a couple politicians with the American people that says, we're going to make sure you get a part of this. That's your money. Oh, great. I've heard them say that a lot of times, and I still don't believe a damn thing they say. So that's how it got marketed to the greatest generation. They're like, I'm sure they all stood up and went, no, 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 you can't make me buy insurance. But then the Supreme Court said, well, it's just a tax. And they're like, okay. But see, it was subterfuge. And so maybe the greatest generation didn't see the snowball rolling down the hill getting bigger and bigger because it was kind of small back then. But then it continued on over all these years till it became what it is today. Obamacare will be the same thing. The Affordable Care Act is really what it's called. They didn't call it the FDR retirement program. Let's call it what it is, Social Security, Affordable Care Act. So it will snowball and become another nightmare. You can fight it, but you're probably going to lose because they have force of government. See, the government's become so big that they can literally just shoot you. They can arrest you, take away your freedom if you don't follow their rules. And that's how bad it's become. Now, we're going that way in so many other directions in this country. I mean, we can name them. In fact, I'll talk about a couple more of them, you know, next week. You know, how about we attack the problem of spending? Because, see, you can't cut spending if you don't cut costs and reduce the money they're just squandering. And you can't do that because we've allowed these laws to be put in place that force us to do it. They're constitutional now, some of them. I would argue that taxation is not constitutional. If you ask the Supreme Court and you look at the amendment, it was never ratified. But that doesn't matter, does it? Because we've allowed them to carry all the guns and point them at us. So when people tell you, you know, it really intimidates me that you carry a gun. Oh, really? Talk to the IRS. Because they got their guns drawn all the time. And they might first audit you and then take your property and then take your kids, take your means of support. Eventually, you're going to go, wait a minute. You're going to put up a little fight and they can legally kill you. This is what we're allowing in this country. Doesn't it bother anyone as much as it does me? Because I look at it and I just go, holy crap, we can't unscramble this egg. And the reality is we can't, but we can sure make it better for us to live with. Maybe if we've got to eat scrambled eggs, at least maybe we can get them cooked the way we want, put salt and pepper on it if we want, maybe get a side of bacon or sausage with that. Because you can't unscramble an egg, but maybe, just maybe, we could put our minds together and at least get some kind of side dish with it and have it cooked the way we want. That's all my thinking for the day. I think I got a headache now, but we'll get back at you next week. So I'd like to leave you all with a thought, because it'll be another week next Saturday, 7 to 8, KYAH, 5:40 a.m. Wow, that's Utah's Talk Authority. Ah, awesome. So we'll be back and I want to give you a thought. What can we do to maybe at least put up a force shield against the evil, not just the evil as far as religious and the temptations and the bureaucracy and all that that brings into our life? How can we protect ourselves from it? How can we be better prepared for the rules of the game that are already set in concrete? How can we protect ourselves? There's ways to do it. They're not illegal.
Do you have a wedding, birthday, graduation, holiday party, or other special event coming up? Would you like to impress your friends or coworkers with your own personal bar and bartender? Professional Beverage Service is Northeast Illinois and Southeast Wisconsin's premium beverage service provider. We specialize in providing bars and bar service for all of your event needs, from simple to elegant, a small home party of 25 to a corporate event of 1,000 or more. Need help finding the right appetizers, meals, transportation, DJs, or even hotels? Professional Beverage Service can help with all of your needs. With free event planning services, Professional Beverage Service will make your event a one-of-a-kind, hassle-free success. From big to small, Professional Beverage Service can handle it all. Call 847-899-5594 or go to www.bevservice.com for more details.
Well, for my parting shot, I just want to add a closing thought. Thank you for listening to The Mark Boyle Show, KYAH, 5:40 a.m. Utah's Talk Authority. This is Mark Boyle, and I've had a great time. Hope you did too.